Well, I think we'll get started. We've got one more presenter that should be coming on any moment. I know a few more people will be joining. But anyway, I'd like to welcome everyone to our biweekly Kiss a Zoom roundtable. It's our hope that through these calls and our collaboration and sharing thoughts and ideas that that we'll come up with some good, solid roadmap for attacking this year. And certainly this year is going to be interesting. Format for the call, we've got it's a panelist discussion. There is a chat icon in your toolbar down below. Feel free to use that. We love the interaction, but when you're not speaking, please do keep your mic muted. As we discuss how we look at the COVID situation, please remember that this is a great opportunity to look at many of your operations and come up with some new and interesting ways of doing things. There are tremendous opportunities out there. I think we're all starting to see those now in terms of your operational plan. So definitely use this as an opportunity to open your eyes and look at some different things. Remember that we are different than Alpine. They have many different limitations that we may not have this year. So keep that in mind and look at the opportunities to increase revenue and participation as opposed to decrease. With that said, getting to our topic today, it is food and beverage ideas under COVID-19. Definitely a little different situation than we're used to. We've got a great panel. I'll introduce our panelists first, and then we'll start off with their discussion. John Ashworth is a ski area architect and principal from Bull, Stockwell, and Allen out in California. We have Brian Mailhot, manager of the Pineland Market at Pineland Farm, Maine. We have Sally Jones, manager of the Tahoe Donner cross-country ski area, also in California. And Nick Mahood, who is a former head chef of a farm-to-table restaurant and current Nordic director for the Woodstock Touring Center. John, I'm going to start with you. I had the opportunity to be on an Alpine call with John, and he presented several really interesting ideas, I thought, on ways to provide food service outside. So, John, I'm going to let you take it from there. I can share my screen if you'd like and get right to your PowerPoint.
Great. Thank you, Reese. Again, my name is John Ashworth. I'm a principal with Bull Stockwell Allen. We specialize in mountain and resort architecture. And I want to start by just giving a big shout out to Olivia Rowan and her team at SAM Magazine. These are some concepts that we shared with the Alpine industry based on a recent huddle via SAM. And so we thought it would be fun to kind of share these with this group because we're really feeling very strongly that this COVID is an opportunity to really create lemonade out of lemons. And so as Reese said, we've been trying to think about how we can not only respond to the regulatory requirements, and those are obviously a much more onerous for downhill, but really thinking beyond regulations and thinking how you can create creative, cost-effective solutions for food and beverage, because it really is a huge opportunity to build that lifestyle element for cross-country and to really kind of generate loyalty and build the brand. So a couple of things we wanted to just kind of start with is, and some of these are going to be from Alpine, but I think that it begins to give you a flavor of how creative one can begin to approach this. So we've titled this segment called Food for Thought. And again, the goal is to really look at how we can create opportunities to engage your guests in creative ways during this COVID period. This is a slide that is from Le Massif. And this, you know, has absolutely nothing to do with cross country because we're now seeing a gondola ride. But Le Massif realized that they could partner with a local company from both a publicity standpoint and basically take their gondola cabs and turn those into socially isolated dining cars. And so here you can see a group enjoying some chocolate fondue on the ride up. And it just gets to the idea that, you know, there are creative ways to think about things that actually can create an experience of a lifetime or something that is quite memorable for your guests. Next slide, please. So again, the title of this is called Food for Thought. And, you know, the idea that this is going to be an interesting year, but if we're thoughtful and creative about it, there are ways to do this and create an experience, a very memorable experience, a lifetime, where people will say, hey, remember when we had COVID and we got to do this? I mean, that's, I think, the way we're encouraging folks to begin to think of this to create some creative solutions. Next slide. So what we have felt very strongly is kind of the fondue point of view versus the fondant point of view. And you can see on the left, again, kind of in a creative approach, socially isolated gondola cab at Le Massif. Whereas on the right, you can see kind of what we think is not the right way to do things. Here you see the fire tape put up around, kind of a miserable experience for folks eating outdoors. And we think that there's a much more branded and creative way to begin to create a memorable cross-country experience. Next slide. Some folks have begun to bubble up or use sort of plastic igloo structures to begin to create private slopeside dining spaces. And I understand that there are a couple of cross-country resorts that are currently investigating these kinds of bubbles. Next slide, Reese. And you can see this is kind of a clever way to create, give everyone their own little spot to hang out together with their group, their socially isolated group. It could be set up for picnics, could be set up for a nice cold brew after a day out in the woods. So this is something that has been done already. This is a resort in Michigan. Next slide. And we're going to get into some kind of hypotheticals. And these are some of the ideas that we talked to via the huddle. And the first one is called the tailgate party, tailgate delivered. And the idea is to basically say, hey, there's a huge opportunity to take a parking lot and turn that into an outdoor dining room. So this is a kind of a pop-up idea. You could actually take one of your lots that is closest and use a series of food trucks using technology, potentially pre-order by app, and then either go up and pick up your meal or have it delivered directly to your Durango. An opportunity to take advantage of the old football tailgate concept and really make it applicable at the resort level. And bring food and beverage out to the parking lot where people can warm up a little bit, use their own car for their own dining space. Again, an opportunity to either use an existing kitchen or to partner with some food trucks or something similar. Next slide, please. This is kind of a fun one too that is based on a concept in Cabo San Lucas. And I don't know if folks have been down there on a summer break, but there's a very, very fun restaurant that's right on the beach and they call it The Office. And the joke is that you can basically go to Cabo and be on vacation. And if you get an important call or a client call or something, you can always say, oh, I'm just having lunch at The Office. And what they've done is they have a kitchen, and this could be, for example, a small kitchen that is in your existing facility. And they basically then set up small platforms and in Cabo in the sand. And in this case, the idea of really taking your beachfront and turning that up into a pop-up dining location. So with maybe a few heaters or if the weather's good, some umbrellas, but basically being able to kind of set up right on the beachfront and offer a service that comes from your existing kitchen. It can provide table service. It can be used throughout the day. Take away that ski lift and you can really imagine this at a cross-country location using that outdoor option where people are already dressed for the weather and use that to provide socially distanced food and beverage. We call this Playa de Neve, which is beachfront in Spanish, snowfront in Spanish. The next one is kind of the idea of a picnic in the woods. And again, here we've got an alpine slope, but could easily be adopted for cross country. The idea here is sort of a branded slopeside picnic. And here you could have a small hut that is offering box lunches. These could be very much branded or prepared earlier and prepared by existing facilities. They could be at a certain price point where you could offer, a $15, $20 box lunch. And here you can basically be out in the woods, ski in, pick up your picnic, and have an opportunity to socially distance, dine in the woods. You could have very, very simple slopeside decks or even clearings in the woods, or even you could have groomed areas that could be set up for this purpose. You could have various size of table types, and you basically can ski right in and then ski right out. Next slide. This is another idea that that really is based on the idea of the old chuck wagons, or the old West, where the pioneers would gather around a campfire and for protection and provide an opportunity for a little bit of communal communal experience, but still with social distancing. So this is an image that shows a collection of small tents that could be various sizes for different size groups, anywhere from, say, 4 to 6 to as large as maybe 12. And these would then could be basically set up on a beachfront or out in a clearing with a portable fire pit. And it really would allows you to have micro groups set up around an outdoor barbecue that could be very, very simple in operation and fire up basically really great barbecue for folks, or other kind of simple fare, and then be able to you be able to kind of either pick up or to have those meals served in your individual tents. So one of the things that's a lot of folks are looking at and is how to use technology. And the technology has come a long way and is not hideously expensive at this point, where you can, for example, use apps to order in advance. The apps can also tell you when the food is ready, when it's fully prepared, and then when you can either pick it up or when it will be served to a designated table. So, for example, you might have an electronic marker. We've all seen those. Where you've ordered online, you pick up the marker, or it's delivered to a table and the food could be brought out to you, or it could be picked up. So kind of a fun idea that could be a wonderful little collection of tents out in the woods. And next slide. This is a concept that is really provides a warming hut or a kind of a private day lodge. So this concept was inspired by the pool cabanas we all see at Miami resorts, where they have the cabanas that they rent by the side of the pool at extravagant prices. And the idea here is, again, you could call ahead and make a reservation at the center and basically say, look, we're going to be a group of 8 to 12 people. We would love to have our own sort of private spot. A tent could be set up basically on a simple platform. They're rented by the day. This again becomes that a kind of private warming hut for the group, and they can return throughout the day. These could be pre-provisioned, for example, with food and drinks and snacks, so that they could be, again, kind of a private lodge experience in a clearing or nearby the existing lodge area. So kind of a fun concept there. As well. And I think that gives you kind of an overview of some of the creative things that can be done. I think that there's a real opportunity, again, to really think creatively and cost effectively to provide a real food and beverage experience that is all about brand and location, featuring local culture, local products, and creating the opportunity to create places in the woods or places on the beachfront that are thoughtful and creative and experiential. Folks are really, as we all know, into experiences these days. And being outdoors in the woods, cross-country skiing is one of the best things to do. And having those landscapes and those areas for potential food and beverage, we think could be a real option. And to kind of think creatively as to how you provide your skiers that opportunity. So picnics, technology, self-serve or service options are all, I think, some of the ideas that we have been talking to a lot of folks about.
Thank you, John. Just one question. Do you know of any of the alpine skiers that have adopted any of these concepts at this point, or is it still too early?
Yes, there are a couple of places that do it. For example, Boyne Resorts is looking at using tents for a variety of their dining facilities on a kind of a pop-up basis at their resorts in the east, including Loon, and including they're also looking at these out west at Brighton and a couple other places. We do know of other resorts that are setting up simple platforms and kind of the picnic offering. So these ideas are being readily adopted by the areas at this point.
Great. Well, thank you. As I mentioned, I saw John's presentation on the huddle, and I thought it was really interesting, and there's a lot of really good takeaways. Let's move now to Brian. Brian is, as I mentioned, the manager of the market at Pineland Farm. They have been open throughout this COVID experience. To my knowledge, they never closed. And they have spent a lot of time thinking about this coming year. And I'd love to open up to Brian to share some of your thoughts on your experiences through, I guess, spring and summer, and then how that's going to transform into what you're going to do this winter. Oh, I think you're still muted there, Brian.
That's better. There we go. We have a year-round market on our grounds here at Pineland Farms, and you know, it's been a learning curve for us, of course, going through the pandemic thus far. But what we realized is we were able to be nimble. We were able to take everything in our market and put it online, and we were able to gain a lot of loyalty and trust with our customers. Prior to March, we were really like a specialty food market. We had a good following in our cafe, but you really couldn't come into our market and get a lot of standard groceries. A lot of it was just specialty and gourmet items. And we realized within 2 days of COVID hitting the state of Maine that people were running out of flour and sugar and yeast, other basics. So we pivoted to that very quickly. We got all those items online, and our sales went up drastically. I think we were up over 40% in the month of April. In the month of April, we didn't actually let a single customer into the store. All of our sales were done offline. So since then, we've reopened in June, and our normal 120-seat cafe got pared down to about 40 seats. And so we immediately got thinking, what's this going to look like during ski season? Because in the heart of ski season, when we have weekends, all 120 seats are taken. Last season, I remember having people sit on the floor, and I'm offering them chairs, trying to do whatever I can to accommodate them. And it's just it's a little bit of a mob scene in a very friendly, cozy way. So myself and Matt Sebastianski, who's our outdoor rec director, who's on this call, we've been putting our heads together and trying to figure out how best to accommodate the number of skiers that we typically have and prepare for an influx of new skiers, because that's what we're anticipating with Alpine. Alpine ticket sales is going to be limited, and so many people trying to gravitate towards different outdoor activities. So a lot of what we just heard in the prior presentation from John are things that we're already wanting to put into place. We're going to take our online store and put our menu onto that. I'm actually hoping to get that within the week, so we can be ready for the rush of fall tourists that come our way when we open our corn maze and such over here. So we're going to have QR codes throughout the trail system. So if somebody wants to place their order online, they can place the order online and just run by the market and pick it up. But that leaves us with the problem of where they're going to eat their food. So we've come up with a number of different solutions. We already have a couple of different fire pits that are going on our trail system, and Matt is working on increasing the number of fire pits, making them larger. So it's not just a little flame, but it's something that can really throw off some heat so people can sit around. And also on our trail system, we have two cabins on opposite ends of the trail system. And those cabins are traditionally warming huts. They can maybe seat a dozen people on benches inside, and there's propane stoves. But what we know is that due to the restrictions we're facing right now, we really can't have more than one family in those cabins. So at most, you're going to be talking about four or five people in those cabins. So rather than utilize those cabins for warming huts, we're going to utilize them as remote food service locations. So people can ski out to these cabins. They can get a limited selection of our food offerings, maybe hot cocoa, coffee, tea, some hot soups, things that when you take them outside and you're sitting around the fire, you're holding them and your hands get warm. So it'll kind of create a little bit of a destination for people to ski to. And the other thing that I'm personally trying to keep in mind, and I think Matt's on the same page, is that when you have your hardcore season pass holders and your hardcore Nordic skiers, they're out there to ski for a few hours to get a good workout in. They're going to go home. Maybe they're going to get something from our market, but it's going to be different for first-time skiers and people who aren't regular skiers. They're going to want something a little more experiential. They're going to want the entire package, not just the skiing itself. So I think giving them an opportunity to ski to this rustic cabin out in the woods, to get themselves a soup or a hot cocoa or maybe a s'mores kit that they can do by the fire with their kids and warm up. I think that'll be something cool that we can provide. And then we're also looking into those garden igloos that John showed a slide of previously. And all of these things that we're talking about doing, I'm personally looking at them as something that we can utilize and use as an asset beyond the COVID pandemic. Knock on wood, this is going to end and be a finite thing that we're dealing with. But in 2022, let's say, I think if we had some of those garden igloos and those domes, I think it's a great venue for some après ski. You can go have a beer or a glass of wine and watch people ski past after you've gotten your workout in. So these are all things that we're looking at doing that we can spend money on now, and it's going to help mitigate some of the effects of COVID, but also we can make some money on it in the future. So that's really where we are at with our planning right now, and it's all fairly able to execute, and we're getting ready to do it.
Thanks, Brian. Two questions for you. First, and we spoke about this earlier this week, are you doing much do you have much of a market for people wanting to buy a meal, take it home, and you know, heat it up or finish cooking it? Is that something that's important to your market?
Yeah, I mean, we don't have we started working on a lot of that just before COVID hit, but we're going to start ramping back into those things, particularly in the fall when people want warm comfort foods. We would always in the past have pot pies and lasagnas available that people can just take home and throw in the oven or reheat in the microwave. And that's something we're going to continue to do as well.
Okay. And then the second question is about your liquor license. And what I've noticed here in Vermont that has relatively strict liquor laws generally, that additional real estate around several restaurants have opened up and they've been allowed to serve alcohol to areas where they normally have not had a liquor license. So it's not actually a piece of real estate that they own or control, but a common area. Have you had any experience with that up there in Maine? Because I know you've got a lot of space that is not in your store or potential space. And I'm wondering if there's an opportunity for you to utilize not only the igloos, but some of those other areas as an opportunity for a happy hour or something.
Well, the official answer is no, we're never going to do that. The unofficial answer, wink, wink, is that we probably will. And up here in Maine is the birthplace of Prohibition. We have all sorts of blue laws that make it difficult to sell beer and wine. And so the state differentiates your licenses between on-premise and off-premise consumption. And our market and cafe, we have an off-premise license. We can sell you a six-pack of beer or a bottle of wine to take home or take off-premise and consume on your own. So we, the salespeople, are not responsible for your well-being, unlike a bartender who can cut you off if they think you've had too much. However, we know from our disc golf course here in the grounds that people will come into the market, buy a four-pack of IPA, and then, you know, have a couple of beers out on the course. And it's never been problematic. So we would expect that if we do have some sort of outdoor dining like garden igloo or domes, things like that, people are probably going to buy a bottle of wine and consume it on their own. But for the sake of the liquor inspector, it's nothing we're going to encourage or advertise. But we've never really tried to clamp down on that, and we haven't had a need to. It's never been a problem in the disc golf world, and I wouldn't expect it to be a problem this winter either.
Right. I do think here in Vermont that it is legal now for these guys to expand to certain other areas. I don't know the specifics, but it is somehow they've got the nod. But anyway, thank you, Brian. Let's move to Sally out at Tahoe Donner. And I know, Sally, your ski area has got certainly a beautiful lodge that we feature on our homepage of the XC Ski website now, because it is so beautiful. But you've done a lot you've put a lot of thought into how you're going to serve food this winter and how that changed from last year. Can you share some of those thoughts with us?
Yeah, sure. Hi, everyone. Normally, we are super blessed with a large, beautiful facility, kind of unusual in the Nordic world. We typically do full service, come up to a cashier, order your food, pay, and then we'll deliver the food to you. It's all plated, made to order, and we pride ourselves on really good food. This summer, we've switched, reduced our menu somewhat, still the same kind of ordering. However, state of California is requiring everybody to eat outside. We're not allowed any inside dining, so order in, eat out. Come winter, regardless of what the state and county are telling us, we're making the call now to only do outdoor dining only and not let or minimal amount of people in the building. So we'll let people in to get rental equipment, but food is going to be come up to the back patio doors, order, and no more made to order. We're just going simple takeout, sandwiches, soups, wraps, baked goods. We'll still do our beer and wine, but bottled, not draft anymore. So bottles and cans. Really like the ideas of providing the picnics to go. So hoping in our marketing, we can encourage folks, bring a backpack, buy lunch, picnic box from us, and then ski out and have lunch on the trails. We're in dilemma too. Our warming huts are small. We get a ton of snow. So to have a warming hut's going to take one family at a time too. To put out remote picnic benches, whatever, we're potentially going to have them buried under 10 feet of snow. So still playing with that. How do we, where do we send them to have their picnic where they can sit comfortably and eat? We do have a large, beautiful patio with fire pits. So obviously folks can sit around there and eat. We are, however, going to be encouraging folks to cycle through. We're kind of at that point of sacrificing, creating too nice of an environment because our limiting factor is our parking. And even though we offer shuttle buses on our busy days, folks typically don't want to take a shuttle bus, we're finding in our Nordic community anyway. So we're encouraging folks to take stuff out on the trail to eat, but our locals take it and take it home and eat it at home so that we can fill your parking spot with the next round of customers. Obviously, we'll be careful, more careful in our wording than that. I love some of the ideas that John and Brian have put forward there. I think that's about it. We're also looking into maybe doing a remote hut, turning one or two of our warming huts into doing cocoa and maybe some cookies for sale out there, and maybe even having a hut right at the base area, maybe even on the patio, selling the simple stuff, the coffees and the cocos, depending on what kind of demand and lines we're seeing for people lining up to get food. Our indoor ordering, we're shifting around a little bit. We're moving all of our refrigerators and soup pots and cash register right to the door. And there'll be a table across that. So folks will just get their noses inside, put their order in, and then leave. It'll be really easy for the cashiers to reach behind to grab whatever and fulfill the order right away. So really looking for fast turnover. Get them fed, get them satisfied, and get them out on the trail.
Sally, what will that do to your budget? It sounds like you had a pretty robust food program historically. What are you thinking will happen, financially for this one?
Yeah, it's unknown at this stage. As everyone's alluding to, we might find the silver lining that maybe this is a way we should have been going a while ago. Obviously, making plated foods is expensive. You have to hire dishwashers and more cooks, whereas a simpler menu of sandwiches and wraps, kind of more like what we used to do in our old facility, may well have a better profit margin. Takeout, wrapping, packaging obviously is going to be an increased expense, and we definitely want to go as green as we can go with those. So we'll be building the cost of the compostable containers into our prices. But yes, overall, expecting a drop in revenue from our retail, probably, and are anticipating an increase in trail passes and rental revenue kind of to help offset that. But still so much is unknown.
Right. Okay, thank you, Sally. Now I want to move to Nick. As I mentioned, not only is Nick the current Nordic director of Woodstock, he does have a pretty extensive culinary background, and he and I talked a little bit about kind of setting up a menu and some menu ideas based on the type of kitchen you have, if you have a kitchen or something else. So Nick, can you share with us some thoughts on, you know, what kind of foods would be good for this new outdoor environment? And let's start there.
Sure. Thanks, Reese. Hi, everybody. So just kind of a few notes that I jotted down here. I think it's really important as we transition to outside, primarily dining, to think about what people want to eat outside. And this, everybody's pretty much touched on this. You're going to want to be serving something that's hot, that's going to warm people up while they're outside, huddled around the fire. Particularly here in New England, we can have some pretty rough days in the winter. So I think, you know, with that said, I think when thinking about a menu, and maybe to piggyback a little bit on what Sally was saying, I think that, you know, paring things down, this could make things a little simpler, perhaps, versus a plated type meal. But just, you know, things that are hot that you can easily transport, whether it's you're going outside, handing those off to the guests, soups, stews, chilies, etc. Those also have the, the ease of preparation is, and you can prepare a lot of those in large batches and hold throughout a weekend or a week. I mean, we do this currently at our Nordic Center. Our F&B team will make us, 10 gallons of soup for the weekend or whatever, of a variety of different kinds, and then we just heat up as we need. But that's a pretty simple hot and nice and satisfying. Fondue, I think, is a great something creative to throw out there. Again, our F&B team does a nice fondue. I think that's something that you could, we talk about experiential. I think that's something that we could really throw out there and add to somebody's day and to their skiing experience. I think the other thing is, last year inside dining, we did a lot of cold sandwiches, plated cold sandwiches. I don't think when you're standing outside, you're going to want to be eating a cold sandwich. But I think, something that you can heat is really important. So like a grilled cheese sandwich, a panini, and these are also things that you can make ahead of time. We did this last year. Our F&B team would make us a variety of paninis for the weekend, and we would just heat them up as we need them. So I think, that kind of pre-planning and thinking ahead and to what you can do simply and quickly and cost-effectively, particularly as we add more packaging and whatnot into this, and perhaps logistics and payroll, if you're talking about some remote serving locations, I think keeping your food costs down is going to be really important. We did a pretty good business with craft beers last year. And being in Vermont, we've got a great variety of craft beers. I think, things like pairing some beers and wines with some of your food offerings and packaging those up, I think would be a nice opportunity there. And then again, for outside, hot drinks, and I guess a lot of this is pretty obvious, but, coffees, teas, hot cocos, hot ciders. And I think, having maybe outside stations for those would be great. Again, you get into some more staffing issues, which is why it's really good to keep your cost of food down. Reese, how's that? Does that touch on everything that we talked about?
Yeah, no, it did. I know Richard has a question, but before I go to Richard's question, Nick, what about those ski areas that don't have a complete kitchen or don't have the staff to really manage that complete kitchen? And actually, this speaks a little bit to Richard's question. And also looking at kind of many of John's layouts, what about partnering with an existing restaurant nearby in town and utilizing them to provide the food part of your food service that you would then distribute in different ways? Or do they cook the paninis, or do they cook the soup? Are there options there?
You know, I think that's certainly a possibility. The other thing is you can, through like a food distributor, you can get most of the, you can get any kind of soup you want. And as long as you have somewhere to heat it up, you're good. You can get pre-made sandwiches and you get a panini press and away you go. So I think that there's, if you can set up an account with a food distributor, or if you're at a resort that has an account, there's a lot of opportunity to get stuff that's pre-made and heat and go.
So to Richard's point, Richard, you asked the question. I'm going to throw it back at you because I know you are tied to a very nice restaurant at your ski area. Have you looked at working with them to create that next experience?
Not yet. I've been working on operational stuff, but the rest, the restaurant and the the sandwich and lunch bar right outside our door, they're owned by other people. They're licensed, for their products and services. And I guess the question is, what can I do as a non-food providing Nordic operator to help support some of those, adjacent businesses? It'd be nice if everyone survives. A lot of people aren't going to survive. So how do we partner with them? What works? How do I use restaurant speak to get with them and say, hey, if you can do something with expanded outdoor dining, or if I can provide additional seating, what can we do for each other to make it work?
Right. Nick, going back to you, you mentioned the food inspector earlier. What do skiers need to think about there, especially if they don't have a large existing food service?
Oh, yeah. Reese and I just talked about this briefly ahead of time. I think it's really important just to make sure, we've got some pretty strict food safety rules here in Vermont, and I'm sure every state does as well, and we're in a situation where, we're currently, we pick up food from our F&B team and we heat it in the kitchen that's at the Nordic Center. So, it's important to make sure that your staff understands, things have to be heated and held at the correct temperature. And, probably if you have an existing F&B team, to make sure that, you're working with them to understand what the rules and regulations are. And, even like with washing dishes, there's a lot of rules around that. And, going to pretty much disposable containers will certainly eliminate some of that. But I think it's just something to be aware of. Those regulations vary state to state. The one thing to answer Richard's question that I would throw out there is, maybe you partner with the food establishments near you and they offer, somebody with a day ticket or a season pass 10% off on a sandwich or a free cup of coffee or something like that to incentivize people to go ski with you and then go over. I don't know, just a thought, throwing that out there.
And Reese, can I jump in? We've seen a couple of things in the Alpine industry that where there is, real concern about the community. And so there have been a lot of interesting partnerships going on. So Richard, I think if you could offer some outdoor space that maybe the restaurant doesn't have that could, basically help both your guests as well as the restaurant is one option. We've also seen promotional tie-ins, as I think Nick just was mentioning, where, for example, you could help them advertise by offering, 10% off or, kind of making it clear that you're looking to help support them. Sometimes the restaurants will be able to operate something like a food truck, which, again, could be set up in parking lots or other kinds of things. And so we've been seeing that happen as well, where the local restaurant will set up their own sort of temporary pop-up version of themselves. And the other thing that we've seen is that resorts are also helping to market the restaurants for take home. So after a day out skiing, maybe people aren't going to be in the mood to cook when they're on their way home, or they want something that's relatively quick and easy. So making a local establishment or restaurant available for something at the end of the day as well, where folks can kind of pick it up, and take it home and either eat it in the car or take it home and have it once they get back to their place.
Oh, good point. Sally, you mentioned getting your guests to take their food and go eat it out on the trail or in one of your cabins. How would that work? And I ask because one of the things that just seems to make sense to me is providing that system where they can buy some food from you, take it out on the trail with, you know, either a pack that you rent them with their lunch or something like that. Have you thought through how they would take that food with them and what that, you know, wrapper disposal system would look like out in your trails?
Yeah, somewhat. Again, everything's kind of evolving. I like the idea of renting a backpack. Actually, we hadn't thought of that. Thinking more in our communication, hoping that folks are a little more tuned in to checking out the website before they come. And we're looking at following our previous calls of having like the first timer, this is everything you should know site page that they can read and have that included in there, bring a backpack so you can carry a lunch that you can buy from a delicious cafe. Our warming huts have trash cans. We service those typically with water, cold water, but we're obviously not doing that this year, but we'd have trash cans out there and Ski Patrol goes out daily or every other day to service those so we could certainly haul trash. So no problem there, but yeah, it's still evolving. So welcome to any ideas on that, of how to encourage folks to get into that rhythm and how to carry the stuff. I don't know that we can service our warming huts as in have a delivery service for folks. That would be a little logistical and would involve a lot of snowmobile traffic that I don't think we want on our trail system. But that has been something we've discussed.
Brian, we've been thinking about a solution that would be particular for cross country, and it very much is that pack in, pack out, which is basically you would rent a pack that would be prepackaged with everything you'd need for your box lunch, and then people would, you know, strap it on, ski out with their group, and be able to have that in the woods, maybe in conjunction with a quick stop for a hot chocolate or something, and then they pack the stuff back into the pack and bring it back to the center at the end of the day. So I think that's something that we had thought could be very, very good for Nordic, where you kind of have these pack box lunches for rent. And the pack comes out, goes out and comes right back.
Nick, I think that's a great idea. Nick and I discussed that when we were talking, and you know, Nick's feeling is, and Nick, share your thoughts there, that your clientele really is looking for an experience where they don't have to do much. Like they don't have to worry about the food piece.
Yeah. I guess what I had said to Reese earlier was I can see some of our clientele who are beginning skiers trying to figure out the skiing piece is challenging enough as it is, let alone having to ski with a backpack, take the backpack somewhere to go ski, to have lunch and then have lunch and pack it back. I do think, I mean, it's a pretty, you don't have a big investment, right, to do something like that. So it might be worth having a couple backpacks on hand that you could rent and offer that. And if it is working, then, you know, great. And you buy a few more backpacks and away you go. I can just see a lot of our guests, they want to go do a lap of the golf course, come back and have lunch sitting down somewhere, but this might be a different year.
Well, and I mean, to speak to that point, you do have a lot of people that wake up in the morning and don't know they're about to go cross country skiing from the inn. So they show up and yeah, they're going to do their 1 hour lap of the golf course and be done with it. Brian, how about you? Have you looked at that transport, you know, from the market of getting people out there, if they're going to one of your huts, how will they do that? How will they transport the food? Is that something you would be involved with? I think you're still muted.
Second time we've done that. It's something that Matt and I have been discussing. We're talking about getting those igloos, those domes, and the biggest issue we're getting with those or hitting up against with those is we have to put them in a place where people can transport their food. So whether they ski to them or walk to them, it's got to have proximity. And we're also looking for electric because we have to find a way to heat those domes. I know you can have those domes with direct vent propane, which is a whole other set of issues. So we're trying to figure that out. One of the things that I had thought of was those drawstring backpacks. You can usually get them printed with your logo on them for fairly cheap, maybe 60 cents each. So, you know, it could be an upcharge where we sell you the drawstring backpack. They're very, you know what I'm talking about? They're like a thin nylon backpack. You can get your logo put on them. So you upcharge somebody $1 for one of those. It costs you 61 cents. You're actually making a profit margin off the sale of the backpack itself. And then you can put their little food crates in that and they can ski out to a location if it happens to be someplace that is not within walking distance of a market.
Got it. John, have you seen, how do they heat those domes that are being used by the Boeing Group? Have you gotten that far into it with them?
Yeah, we're actually helping them with some larger tents. So they're using the equivalent of small sprung structures. And we've actually created a prototype. So we're working with them at 5 different resorts where they'll have a series of small prototypes that they can put into place. And those have internal HVAC components. And we've also created a bathroom module for them as well so that they can have a tented bathroom experience as well as a tented food and beverage experience. Now, those are relatively expensive, tents because they're fully insulated and heated. We have been looking at other alternatives that would, be able to be heated with small propane heaters. And we're also looking at an alternative with them, which is more just like a cover, a canopy, if you will, that has then some lighting and some propane heaters. So it's sort of not a true enclosed tent, but just more of a covered space. So it's more like outdoors. And the thinking is, since folks are generally in ski gear, that, you know, they're sort of dressed for the elements, but yeah, it is nice to be able to warm up. So some, you know, in the fully enclosed ones, there are modular heating units and then propane heaters in kind of more the outdoor covered spaces.
Right. What about outdoor fireplaces and looking at, okay, so you've got some kind of outdoor food. Where do they go with it? Like, is it just a picnic table out there? Or I know, Brian, you mentioned larger than normal fire pits. Have you guys researched that a bit yet?
I'll actually let Matt speak to that. He would probably have a little more information.
All right.
Matt, that's for you, buddy. You got to unmute.
I got to figure this out. There it is. I'm taking your lead on the mute thing. Reese, if we're going to have a fire pit, my thought was to line picnic tables up with spacing in between that we can groom in between them and have multiple tables that we can sweep the stuff off and just let people sit and eat. People do want to sit down and eat. So that's kind of our thought. Is that the question that you're asking, is where they're going to eat, right?
Well, yeah. And also, how effective will the fire pits be in terms, like, will people actually hang out? And looking at John's like tailgate, if you did a tailgate scenario somewhere, now we're not the size of Alpine. We're smaller. We're definitely smaller. But if you created that, would people want to do that? And I'm thinking, I guess, specifically maybe here in New England, where it's not that nice sometimes in January. I'm wondering how much people want to really be sitting outside like that. I know if you go to Europe, in ski country, in Austria or Germany or Switzerland, their indoor capacity for seating year round is way smaller than their outdoor capacity. And you look at any of those restaurants, they are, well, bars, they're going from 9 or 10 in the morning, you know, through the night with outdoor activity, regardless of the weather. It could be raining, snowing, or sunny and beautiful, and the places are packed. That's kind of where they come from. We seem to not be there, more in the we got to control the environment and make it as sterile as possible and just, you know, mundane and not be outside. So I wonder if we can convince our people to actually hang around outside, or is it going to be, you know, use your car as your personal base lodge? And kind of I don't know. Gareth asked the question, John, I guess I'll throw that at you. Do you know much about the sanitization of those domes after they've been used by one person, what the thought is there, especially if it's limited in ventilation?
Yeah, they are limited in ventilation, and there have been two techniques. One is to kind of limit their use and provide a little bit of break between groups. And then also the second option is to just go in. They're essentially plastic domes, so you can go in and, you know, basically wipe them down. And that's typically what's done, is the staff will come in, wipe them down, and then allow another group in.
Okay. Okay. Don asked a question about operating in a cell phone or internet void area. And certainly in our area in New England, we have many of those also. I guess, Brian, you guys are planning that QR code, which requires internet. You have internet everywhere in Pineland. I guess you're relatively sophisticated.
There's enough of a signal around where you can get through for the most part. Usually get a couple of bars around here.
Right.
Yeah.
I would imagine, Don, to your question, I would imagine that a lot of those buzzer systems that restaurants work off of are more radio frequency and not cellular internet. But I'm speculating on that entirely. I'm not sure. But yeah, in your location, you don't have much connectivity there. Don, actually a question to you. So you have that beautiful deck and you've got some indoor space. Have you guys given some thought yet to what winter will look like?
Work on unmuting. Yeah, we've given a lot of thought to it. Summer's gone very well because we've been able to have that outdoor space. We've seen our clientele change a little bit, but you know, people are using the outside and stuff like that. Winter, you know, much like I think Brian said, that you've got 140 people inside. That's how our lodge looks in the winter. We're wall-to-wall people, and it's sneezing and sweat and snot and everything else. And so we're looking at potentially having a food truck trailer out off adjacent to the deck to give us an extra capacity for service outside with, you know, more limited, you know, stews, hot chocolate, chili type menus. Also thinking about that sort of musée, those nylon string bags, and then placing some picnic table type islands out on the system that might work well for, as you said, sort of more advanced skiers and users. But yeah, we're struggling with it because the restaurant is the driver of our business. So to Richard's, you know, question, I think that the restaurant adjacent to him is going to be happy to have a ton of new traffic and new users, you know, in the Nordic world. Whereas we're going to be suffering a bit. Like, yeah, our ski rentals are going to do great, but you know, we need to get that extra $15, $20, $30 out of people in the restaurant to really make it all work. So that's what we're working on. And those are some of the ideas that we've come up with.
And your restaurant counter is pretty far into your building, so to speak. So you couldn't easily put a window service or something like that.
We do have a back access that we're looking at converting. We've been doing that this summer where people don't have to come in if they don't want to come in. We would have to streamline that a little bit for winter. Like, it's been a sort of ad hoc thing for the summertime. But it definitely has increased traffic. I think on that note, we'll also streamline our menu because it's also doubled the amount of orders that can come into the kitchen sort of simultaneously. So on busy days, it can be overwhelming for the, you know, operationally, that instead of having two points of sale, now we have three. And so it's sending, you know, another 30 or 40% of orders back into the kitchen in the same rate. So we have to balance that in the winter time as well.
Got it. Matt, you brought up the fact that you have had people sticking around a fair amount. Now, granted, it's summertime, so, and we've had an amazing summer here in New England. But you're feeling that really people will stay around.
Yeah, you know, we've had fire pits here for almost 15 years. And, you know, people all the time stop and enjoy the fire. You know, they like to smell the wood smoke. They stop. They can rest for a little bit, but not get really cold. You know, they're sweaty, so they'll cool off really quickly. Just gives them a little bit longer, you know, time outside. And, you know, especially if you do, last year we did snow sculptures by the fire pits, and people would stop and have their pictures taken with them. And that was really pretty fun, having some artistic folks on our staff. But I think the fire pits will be a big bonus to keep people warmer longer in the outdoors.
Nick, have you thought of fire pits in Woodstock?
Yeah, we've used them for the past several years. And I mean, they definitely get people hanging out outside. It's just like Matt said, it's a nice draw. The wood smoke gets everybody, I don't know, feels very outdoorsy. But no, people will definitely hang out around them.
Right. Okay. So we're approaching the end of our hour. One thing I did want to follow with is I did have a fascinating conversation with the chair of the culinary department at Johnson & Wales earlier this week in researching for this call. And my question to him was, what are they doing at that culinary school level to prepare their current students for this, this potential change, this current change in food prep or in food? And, you know, what could he share with us? He said that this is something that they are spending a lot of time on right now, that much of the fall curriculum is around pop-up restaurants that are outdoors. He shared that the fine dining piece to go is of particular interest to them. What does that menu look like? Which was one of the questions I was asking him. It's like, what are those menu items? He said that he didn't know yet, but they're going to be working on that. And my other question to him was the transport. What are they seeing and what are they researching for transport devices, bento boxes, thermoses, that sort of thing? And how does that affect the quality of the food? I know one of the restaurants around here that my kids take out from, by the time they get their food home, you know, it's kind of soggy and not quite as appealing as when you eat it in. And so looking at, again, the quality of that experience, how do you pre-prepare that food, knowing that it's going to sit in a container of some sort for X amount of time? And what are those container options? Which ones work really well? Which ones don't work so well? So he has said that he will gladly share the results of not only his menu items, but also the containers that they're researching, that data with us, but he doesn't have it yet. So I do hope to, revisit this on a Zoom call with him. Probably won't be until November, but interesting. Anyway, I'd like to thank you all, specifically our panelist, John Ashworth. That was fascinating. And thank you so much for sharing your PowerPoint with us. Brian Malhot from Pineland, always great to hear what you guys are doing up there. Sally Jones from Tahoe Donner, great to learn what you're doing. And Nick, thank you for your menu suggestions and ideas there. I think this will continue to be an evolving category. Certainly, we're into back to school now, so I think this time frame that we're in right now will really shape what the rest of the fall and early winter looks like. So it should be super interesting. But anyway, thank you all. The audio to this and the notes will be posted on Monday in the latest news section of the CCSAA.org. So if anybody in your staff missed this or would like more info, by all means, check that out. And we welcome any comments or suggestions or thoughts. Our task force will be meeting on this coming Monday and we'll identify what our next call's topic will be. So thank you all. Have a great day and look forward to seeing you on the trail soon.